What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Ear Space. On today's podcast, we get to know Mike Madrigal, formerly of Mr. Suit Records. I had a fascinating conversation with Mike about, you know, running a record store here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, what he's been up to lately, music, the Lancaster music scene, and of course, his band High Heels that just released a new project. We're going to play a little bit of a song here called Jane from Occupied Downingtown. Definitely be on the lookout in the link in the description wherever you're listening to stream their latest record from High Heels. Really cool dude. Fascinating conversation. I'm sure y'all will enjoy it. Longtime listeners of the podcast know that Earspace is made possible by Rock 10 Productions. If you're looking for any recording, mixing, or mastering for your audio project, check out rock10productions.com. That's ROK10productions.com. And of course, Earspace is also brought to you by Rock 10 Rollers, natural hemp papers, king size slim, including crutches, currently exclusively available at Rock 10 Productions at 417 West Grant Street here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you're looking for any awesome rolling papers for whatever you're rolling up, check out Rock 10 Rollers. Hope y'all are doing groovy out there. And without further ado, here is our conversation with Mike Madrigal. Podcast. Thank you very much for coming. If you want to just introduce yourself, tell me a little bit about you, and we'll get on to the podcast.
Hi, my name is Mike Madrigal. Thank you for having me. This is the sound of my voice.
It's a nice voice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, how long have you had that voice?
I'll be 44 in June.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Happy early birthday.
Thank you.
I feel like you could always say happy early birthday to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
So I met you briefly over at the... the 10-year anniversary for the Wax on Wednesday thing. And you were selling records because you sell records. You were involved in the vinyl space, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So, I guess actually flashback, I don't know when it was. Maybe it must have been in like 2014 or something like that. Some buddies and I were trying to do like a record roulette thing, and we're like, oh, we got to go to a cool record shop to film one of these videos. And we came to Mr. Suits, which you were the or are the owner of, and met you there and bought some cool records. We're going to kind of bounce all over the place
here.
What let's talk about the company. Let's talk about Mr. Suits. Like, take me through the journey of that.
Well, let's see, 2007, that spot opened up, and always wanted to, I've been working at record stores for as long as I've held jobs, and even before that, going to flea markets and yard sales and stuff like that, and hunting for fun stuff. So that spot opened up, basically knew Steve, who owns Transcending Flesh, the tattoo shop that's in there. They were in a position where they had whoever was in there, I think were from Ghana or someplace exotic and had to go back to take care of family stuff. So it was one of those things like, hey, they're great tenants, but they need to kind of leave right now.
Yeah.
So very quickly, we got some stuff in there and had the shop for a solid 15 years.
That's dope. Very cool. What like brought you, this is kind of a bigger question, but like what brought you into the world of records?
I always have enjoyed, obviously, music. It seems like, hey, I like music. That's dumb. But records and movies and even stuff I'm not as into, like, I take it back. I do like comic books. Stuff like that, there's always so much stuff out there that is kind of not exactly secret, but it's that thrill of discovery of like, okay, I don't exactly know what this is, or I thought I did and it's totally different. So that is always going to be super, super exciting to me, whether it's some crazy record or some crazy old movie or underground comics or any stuff like that. It's the thrill of the hunt. And yeah, you know, records and also books and all this stuff like that, even if you're not actively, if you're not listening to every single record in that crate every single day, doesn't matter. You come into a room, you have this stuff, you get to enjoy it, whether it's the art or whatever.
Yeah.
There's such a kind of a push these days where kind of everyone's interests are kind of on their phone or online, obviously, which has its time and space, but yeah, it's just like kind of neat to enjoy things.
And the collectability.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. The question I always love asking musicians, people that are around music, if you could look back, do you remember like the first song that you ever heard that made you feel something?
Yeah, I'm super fortunate, and my parents were huge into soul music. So my first memory of music, enjoying it a lot, would be the Isley Brothers.
Okay, cool. Very sweet. Do you remember like around what period? And you said early on, obviously, but do you remember how old you were by chance? Just out of curiosity.
You know, two, three, maybe four.
Gotcha.
Again, as a child of the 80s, Michael Jackson Thriller was everywhere. So that obviously I enjoyed quite a bit as a kid, but you listened to the parents' soul music all through my childhood. Rock music in the 80s, if you didn't, it's easy to take things for granted now with the internet where you can kind of find things very quickly and easily. But back then as a youth, it was hair metal if you turned on the radio. And that was a drag. So kind of discovering rock music that I liked a whole lot didn't come until a little later. But yeah, it was kind of a whole other new world, fun things to get into.
Gotcha. I do have a soft spot in my heart for hair metal. I don't know if it's because I didn't live through it and like wasn't subjected to it all the time, but there's just, I don't know, the guitar tones can be really good. Mm-hmm. The drums generally were terrible.
Right.
But I think there's, I don't know, there's a level of it that I'm just like, I wish I could have been there for a minute.
Yeah, and to not shit on hair metal, but it's, the issue isn't always the music. The issue is when there is too much of the same thing.
Yeah.
And then what also happens with any kind of subgenre explosion is all these kind of ancillary bands that maybe don't fit the mold that kind of get sucked into it. And then they're a hair metal band just be by dint of being, having poofy hair and a guitar solo, even like, well, they're more of a kind of AC/DC-ish hard rock band or something like that.
Almost happened to Pantera.
Almost happened to Pantera. Yeah. So there's so much stuff where it's like, with a little bit of remove, you're like, that wasn't that bad. Disco. I mean, for the longest time, it's like, disco fucking sucks. You look back like, that was fun, you know?
Yeah, like there's people dance.
And some of the stuff like, well, Giorgio Moroder had some neat production stuff going on and stuff like that. So it's, you kind of, once you get out of the, like, and again, now it's so much better, which is like, hey, there's satellite radio, there's everybody's record collection, there's everybody's Spotify playlist or whatever like that. It's not like, well, hey, there's three TV channels on, so I'm watching the Cosby Show, whether I like it or not. It's TV's on. True. That's what's on.
Yeah. I'm super curious. You said this specific shop was open for the last 15 years.
Yes.
And that 15 years, you know, music has changed and the industry is always changing, but like, what, from your perspective, you know, what was the change like in vinyl specifically? I mean, as somebody that's, you know, was aware of, you know, on the forefront, you know, people getting more interested in it. Yeah,
for the first 5 years, it was an hourly, anyone who walked in the door was, oh, they still make these? And,
yeah.
You know, Stans has been there since the 60s.
Right.
Angry Young and Poor has been there for forever. CI has been there forever. You know, so it's like Lancaster, just downtown, has always had more than one record store. Mm. But it was still kind of like the battle of, yes, we're here. Yeah. And like, that was actually really great about in general. I mean, everybody loves Amy Winehouse, but just like, hey, you could I could point at the wall, like, you know who Amy Winehouse is.
Right.
Here's her record. They're still making records. It's not $1 million. You can go home, play on your record player like you did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that kind of battle, and then feeling like overnight, suddenly, hey, I have a box of records for a lot of people, not for everybody. Hey, I have a lot of box of records I want to get rid of. I don't know where to take them. No one wants them. I should just throw them out. To, I have a box of records in my basement. They're covered in mold. They're worth $5,000. Give me money.
Right, right.
So that shit was a drag.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, every industry has something like that. But that was kind of the big kind of thing of record store day is a whole other subject, but that helped get people to realize, hey, we're here. There's people are still buying records. This didn't stop. And young people are buying records too. It's not just old boomer dudes buying Eagles records. It's everybody.
Yeah. Is the curve like still on the upswing? Or
the curve is still on the upswing. New vinyl prices they need to kind of relax with that shit because that's not fun. And if you want to get young kids into and continue buying records, you need to not make a Post Malone record $45. It's just not sustainable. Record Store Day, again, started with good intentions and has some fun stuff coming out, but that very quickly got very bloated with a lot of, you can be a novelty record, but you then also can't be too much money. And you know, it's not their fault that flippers come out of the woodwork and think that they can afford their next vacation to the Bahamas with a couple records they bought. But I get it's at a strong plateau, whereas people aren't going to stop buying records anytime soon. People aren't going to start buying comic books anytime soon. Sports cards are still, I thought that was, but people are doing it. So,
right. What, and forgive me, what is Record Store Day?
Record Store Day was started by a couple different record stores in, I want to say Atlanta and maybe North and South Carolina. Okay. Bigger stores have been around for a couple of decades, lined up different labels to say, hey, we're going to make it. It's usually 420, ha ha ha. Find a special release. It'll only be available in independent record stores that day.
Oh, cool.
They can't sell it beforehand. So best case scenario, the first, let's say, 3 or 4 years was 100 solid releases, whether it is, you know, some live Black Crowes thing on a fun color or a reissue of something that's been out of print for a while. And again, when it was like a limited number of solid releases, it was great. But then the last year I did it, it was over 400 releases.
Oh, wow.
And there would be, this was always, every year there'd be a Dave Matthews Band something, a box set, whatever. Yeah. And I don't know where they all went because they always say like, hey, there's 5,000. So every store would say, hey, can I get 100? Thinking, yeah, I'll get 30. Yeah. And none of us would ever get any. So every single time, there'd be someone, multiple people actually, coming in. Do you have the Dave Matthews Band box set? No, I ordered it. We didn't get it. Sorry, you know, we would love to sell it to you. And then, like, storming out, being pissed off. So in the same way that people came in and rediscovered how much they enjoyed going to record stores, there's people who were kind of like, well, they told me I go to this store and I would get this thing and it's not there. Fuck this. You know, so that... And again, you know, there's only kind of so much of the stuff you can control, but it just got too bloated, too out of hand. A lot of stuff then would just come out again later. So people are like, wait, so I waited in line at 6 a.m. and bought this thing and now it's just out and I can just go get it wherever. That kind of sucks. Yeah. So that's had its own rise and fall and is still going. And again, every year the list comes out like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. So in there, you know, there's some still fun stuff to be had.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And like I said, too, we're going to kind of fly all around here. Yeah. Time. There's no real, I always have to say that before I go in a completely different direction. But where are you from? Where are you born at? All that good stuff.
I grew up in I don't even think we had a stoplight. Nice. This little town called Mertztown that's like a half hour from Reading and a half hour from Allentown.
Okay.
And then as I grew older, I moved to a slightly bigger rural area called Albertus and went to a high school called Emmaus, which is at least somewhat known.
Yeah, I've heard of that before.
I actually had like a graduating class of a couple hundred kids, whereas my brother graduated from where we grew up, and I think he was one of maybe 80 kids who graduated.
Wow. Gotcha. What was the music scene like out there?
Well, we had Allentown and Reading, and they both had their great spots.
Croc Rock.
At times, owners of the Croc Rock are pretty wild.
Is it still? We were talking about this the other day. Is it still there?
No. I forget what the final nail of the coffin is, but actually, it's interesting. You can kind of track how that all works. That place closed, and Stroudsburg, a big kind of skiing town at the base of the Poconos, has a great old theater called the Sherman, and kind of all the stuff that Croc Rock was booking shifted over to the Sherman.
I saw Coheed there.
Yep.
And Circus Survive, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Croc Rock was actually a little after my time. At that point, I think I was living in Lancaster.
Okay.
But Allentown and Reading, to a degree, had really vibrant, call whatever you want, punk, hardcore, DIY scenes. The only drawback until about the mid-90s, and luckily I wasn't there for the worst of it, was Bethlehem Steel, when I was a kid, closed. Everyone's out of work.
Right.
A horrible, horrible, horrible Nazi skinhead problem erupts to the point that they made jokes about it on Saturday Night Live. Like, it was nationally known.
No shit.
So going and seeing whatever, you know, MDC or Fear or whoever at these places in Allentown in the late 80s, early 90s meant you're also fighting Nazis. Thankfully, that wrapped up by the time I was 13 and started going to punk shows, but it was still kind of like, well, there's the Nazis, and I hope they don't decide to beat the shit out of us or whatever.
I didn't know that.
And then in Reading, it was really, really bad. There's a place called Top of the Rock that was just notorious. But Reading also had this place called Unisound that was a DIY space that Inside Out with Zach from Rage Against the Machine played there, like in, you know, the early 90s. They had Quicksand and, you know, what's neat is you can go on Instagram and different people kind of archive old flyers and you're like, holy crap, like, you know. While I was 11 and going to school down the street, this place in Allentown or Reading was having these legendary lineups. So
that's wild. Yeah, there's this page that I follow called, I think it's Return to the Pit, and it's like, old, like, late 90s, early 2000s punk hardcore shows, and just like, damn. And it's photos from those shows.
Oh, yeah.
And
cool.
Like, wow.
I'll have to check that out.
It's stepping back into time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a trip. So what age were you when you left there and came here, or what brought you to Lancaster? I guess.
Brought me to Lancaster, let's say 2002 or 2003. My older brother moved here to work on a magazine that was actually based, you guys know Greg from The Chameleon, but also Phantom Power. His house previously was owned by a couple who had like a fun kind of alt culture magazine, hired him to kind of oversee it and stuff like that, and then they're kind of going to make the next step, and the money didn't quite come through. This was also the early 2000s where like magazines kind of went through a down period after like Maxim and stuff like that. But in the meantime, he plays the drums and has been in bands since he was a kid, and started playing with some guys, and that started to kind of congeal into something. So I basically moved here, and we had a band for a good like 8 or 9 years, and got to go over the country doing DIY tours and having fun.
Very cool. So what was the kind of like the, I know we kind of touched on a little bit, but like the origin of Mr. Suits? I'm trying to put together the timeline in my mind. Like, you come here, you're playing the band, you're going around and stuff. When were you like, hey, I want to like start my own brick and mortar spot?
That was always kind of in the background, because like on tour, the first place we'd always go to was record stores. And got to see all these awesome record stores across the country, got to meet all these great people. When I wasn't doing that, you know, coming back home and sometimes working for record stores when I wasn't flipping burgers and stuff, that just kind of naturally started to wind down, because you can kind of only do DIY touring without kind of someone stepping up and kind of giving you a hand at some point. And when that kind of didn't happen, it was like, all right, hey, we've had a fucking blast. And of course, all of us were starting to be in long-term relationships and stuff like that. So as that was kind of winding down, the idea of like, well, a spot would be pretty cool. And then that spot opened up while the band was still happening, but still kind of just at a minimal level. And that was about 2007.
Gotcha. Where's the name come from?
The name is a song from this great English post punk band called Wire.
Okay.
And they had a list of or no, I had a list of different names I wanted to use, and I showed it to a buddy of mine, and he was like, oh, you should call it Mr. Suit. I was like, oh, okay, because of the Wire song. He's like, no, actually, I don't know this song. I just think that's neat. And I kind of didn't realize at the time, a little before my time with Lancaster, there was another shop here called 12XU that was also a Wire song.
Oh, no.
Okay. So kept the tradition going. So
there you go.
That's funny. That's sick. That's awesome. Nice. So what, what's, you know, why'd you guys close?
Things were going great, and then COVID happened, and during shutdown was really scary, but I also obviously sold online. Mm-hmm. That kicked into higher gear, which was awesome, except for then immediately the U.S. postal system got
right.
a mess. So yeah. any given Dang, day, yeah. I would have $300 to $400 worth of records just out in the ether. Yeah. And like everyone, to a degree, everyone would be like, hey, I get it. But, right. you know, I'd wake up to 10. Hey, where the fuck's my CD? Mm. Which sucks.
Yeah.
That I got through that. And then that summer was great. And then past that, like it was business slowed down to the point where you kind of think, oh crap, there's not, I don't know what the kind of when we get back to normal is.
Mm, right.
There was one or two times more, I think we still had to be in shutdown, I want to say. Yeah. And then, you know, you expect Christmas to kind of come through kick ass and it doesn't. And then summer, same thing. All these tours are going to come in and kind of save the day. And that didn't kind of happen.
Yeah.
So that was all going on. And then the last year I was open, Steve, my landlord, said like, hey dude, I can't do this anymore, and sold the building.
Oh shit.
Which I get, but the guy yeah. who bought it is a guy who buys a bunch of buildings. Right, and then yeah. sadly in that May my dad got diagnosed with leukemia. I was the primary caregiver. My brother lives in New York.
Yeah.
So all that stuff at once was kind of like, this is enough of a sign that I've had a great 15-year run. It's just time to do something different.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm still selling records. I've right, met right. so many amazing people, not just in Lancaster, but all over the place.
Yeah.
So I have no regrets, but it was definitely one of those things of like, if one of these things wasn't happening,
yeah, right.
I That's could kind of soldier on. And people are still in town buying yeah. records. Right. It's not like a totally done thing, but it's like the... it's kind of like the meme you see of like, hey, is this the hottest summer I've ever been through? Or is this the last, this hot summer and the next one's going to be even worse? So it's like, man, right, if I'd stick this out for another year, what's it going to look like in 2024 or whatever?
Yeah. That is so, that's a gamble.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not to be like on a bummer, but I was just curious. So like what are you doing now? You know, obviously you said you're still like selling records and whatnot, but like, was this always like your main thing, or you got, what do you do?
The records were obviously the shop was 24/7. And, but during that, Zetropolis, basically got my wife and I to program their, Fright Night. So First Friday, Fright Night, okay. showing horror movies and stuff like that. Obviously, I've known those people for a long time, and almost days after I closed up, Chayla, who is one of the owners, was like, hey, we kind of need a theater manager.
That's awesome.
So I, yeah, I'm incredibly fortunate and was unemployed for 72 hours, and now my commute to work is the same. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I assume, it's like, I'm going to go, there's a coffee shop down the street. I'm like, I'm going to go make coffees, and then whether it's somebody, you know, at Clear Brothers or Rock Lititz or some other place around here, something will eventually pop up, but it just yeah. happened way quicker than I thought it would.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's always good to hear, like, the support of the Lancaster business owners, especially within the music world and stuff, you know? I mean, we've been through so many weird ups and downs over the years, and everyone's always been super cool. So, shout out to everybody out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
You'd mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Rolling Papers that you are square.
Yeah.
has that been a lifelong thing? Like, do you claim edge?
No. Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. Even without being straight edge, I was in a straight edge hardcore band in high school, and I am, and they would laugh and tell you the same thing. I'm probably the only guy in that band who held out for not drinking or smoking.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I have nothing against it, but because of my older brother and hanging out with a lot of his friends, I was always kind of the youngest guy in the room. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, well, everyone else is drunk, but I'm 14 or whatever, so I'm not going to do that. And then kind of I woke up and I'm 44. I'm like, oh, I guess I don't drink. So it was never like a conscious decision. Probably plenty of people. What's up?
It's probably for the best.
I mean, plenty of people smoke to manage pain, do all sorts of different stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. I think anyone would agree, like, hey, if you have whatever chronic pain and it's between vaping or going on some kind of horrible opiate, let's do the vaping, you know?
Right.
So, and I'm very sure everyone would agree.
Yeah, I could dig that.
I'm just always so impressed when, like, people can, like, you just, your whole life, just raw dogging.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing, too, where in college, like, that kind of sense of, hey, I can't have a beer, I have to get blackout drunk, I can't smoke a joint, I have to be annihilated. Again, once you kind of get out of, like, dude, this guy smokes pot, but that's all he does, and he is wasted 24/7. Whereas now it's like, oh, this guy is high, I didn't, you know, like, you kind of find your sense of proportion and how to kind of operate around the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But do you imagine, like, growing up, having been the youngest and, like, not being able to at first and then seeing it firsthand completely sober, and you're just like, oh, I just don't want to do that.
I'll tell you what, you know, the most stoned person, if they're just on a couch silent, that's not bothering anybody. Oh, yeah. Ugly drunks where they're, you know, it's time to fight all of a sudden, you have to drag this guy away from bothering some girl, that shit fucking sucks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And there's a cut, you know, there's so many times where you start like, okay, hey, you know, this isn't, this guy just got too drunk, this guy is an asshole.
Yeah. Mm.
But again, that's part of growing up, and you need to start to recognize these things.
For sure.
I've always found this similar with myself and other people that have, like, extreme passions with music or something else, that they're really dived into, like, one specific thing, that then don't do mass amounts of drugs and whatnot on the side. Like, what do you do when you're not focused on music? Like, what do you like to do?
I could be watching horror movies and dicking around on a guitar for eternity. Yeah. Love that. But, my wife and I'm extremely lucky, and I've never had as much fun with doing anything or being around anybody as with my wife, Colleen.
That's awesome.
So, whether it's just farting around and watching TV or walking our dog or going to on any kind of fun road trips, I plan on doing that for the rest of my life.
That's awesome. How'd y'all meet each other?
Interestingly, so there used to be a kind of like an eco-friendly home goods store at the corner that she worked at, and then she also worked at the bookstore that used to be above where the shop was.
Okay.
And bumped into each other a bunch of times, and we would get each other's mail all the time and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, like, oh wait, I have to find, like, a reason to actually, like, talk to this person. And then things just kind of got rolling, and here we are 10 years later.
That's awesome.
That's cool, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's good stuff.
So you stopped touring, but you never stopped. Did you ever stop playing? Because I know you're still in High Heels now.
Yeah.
Was there ever a period where you're just like, I'm not going to play music for a little bit?
Nothing super extensive. Whether it was just playing with buddies or something like that always kind of continued. Let's see. Yeah, High Heels has been going for a little while, and we've had a blast getting to put out records and play regionally and stuff like that. That is something that's super fun. It's, you know, there's all these new kind of DIY spots popping up in the general region that it's really fun to participate. Mm-hmm. We got to do a split with this band called Gino and the Goons that we've been longtime fans of, and Colleen got to do the art for our side of the split. So it's like, cool, we can make these fun little art objects where it's like, hey, even if kind of nobody gives a shit, I would do this every 6 months. So that's really super cool. And anything kind of that comes out of that's just kind of gravy.
Those are the best bands to be in. Like, that, I'm in a band right now. We're called Flapjack Jones and the Bender Bros.
Yeah. Well, you guys have played Zetropolis.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like that same vibe. It's like, we get together weekly and, like, we are writing tunes and we're making a record. But it's like, if we did none of the other stuff, like, we've, you know, the past two or three years we've been playing a lot, but, like, this year we have St. Patrick's Day, I think, is our only show on the calendar this year.
And
like, we're still, like, just getting together with your buddies and making noise is fun.
Yeah, even as the old band was wrapping up, that it kind of dawned on me, and I think a lot of people, it's like, hey, with between Bandcamp and SoundCloud and all these places, it's the best time ever to make whatever fucking music you want and release it and you know, with the level of kind of attention you can.
Yeah, the cost of entry is like virtually nothing.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. So that is fun and unobtrusive. You don't have to worry about making promo releases and starting an LLC and all these things that can be really daunting and intimidating. So yeah, it's a great time to, you know, if I had time, I'd be in 300 bands. It would, and big shout out to you guys had Molly. When I first moved here, All American Radio that she was in, as we were kind of playing more, they were starting to, I don't think they exactly broke up, but they were just kind of winding down. Mm. But I mean, you know, 20 years later, we're both still playing in bands. Her band gets to fucking tour Australia. I mean, yeah. Holy shit. So yeah.
I'm actually going out with them to Europe.
No shit. Yeah, that's going to be a blast.
I'm very excited for that.
Where are you going to be playing?
Germany, Netherlands, bunch of UK stuff.
Right, right.
I think there was talk of Ireland, but it's not happening.
Sure.
But some cool places I'm stoked to see.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, with this stuff, you kind of have to roll the dice, but I was buddies with, if you remember, a band called Movies with Heroes.
Yeah.
They got to go to Europe a bunch of times, and I think acoustic, actually, matter of fact, Adam Lenhart across the street from you guys was their guitar player for that time.
Oh, no way.
And, you know, that came with a price tag, but, I mean, playing your songs in Ireland or Europe or anywhere else, I mean,
damn,
you 100%. Know.
Yeah, like, they asked me, and I was like, I would be so dumb to say no to this. I can't not go.
Yeah, it was funny. I remember you called me, and you're like, hey, so I got this opportunity. I just wanted to know your opinion. I'm like, dude, obviously, go do it. Yeah. It's funny you say Movies with Heroes. I'm 30 years old, right? I'm not so young, but I mean, I went to the Chameleon Club years and years and years ago to see whoever was playing, and they were playing a show, and I bought one of their CDs, and then, like, I must have been, I don't know, 13 or 14 or something like that, and then my, like, first girlfriend broke up with me, and the song Miracle Drug by Movies with Hero was, like, my fucking sad jam.
Oh, yeah.
And for years, I was like, this band is awesome, this is so cool, but I never, like, super looked into it, and then maybe, like, 6 months ago, I don't know how or why. Did they just recently release a new project?
Yeah, yeah.
Or they, like, recently?
Yes, yeah. Did it a couple.
Must have been why.
Again, they never really broke up, so I don't want to call a reunion, but they have become active again, we'll say.
I saw them posting somewhere on Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, that's that band. So then I sent them this really long Instagram message, like, from the Rock 10 account, and was just like, hey, you know, like, just wanted to let you know, whatever. But they were very nice. They responded, and I'll have to have them on the podcast sometime. But
yeah, I mean, they're all
super embarrassing,
absolutely the sweetest guys. And, and Jerry Bentley, you know, recording extraordinaire, he's fantastic. But yeah, all those guys are super nice. Their band's great.
Big shout out to them.
Yeah, yeah.
I was curious. You said you listened to the Molly episode, so you definitely heard me ask her this question. I try to ask people a lot, especially that have been around Lancaster for a while. You have gotten to see, you know, the things change a lot over the time, and, you know, within the music world, and obviously just, you know, the Lancaster itself is changing and whatnot. What's your opinion on where it is now, and where do you think it's going?
Where it is right now, between the variety of venues and the variety of music, I mean, in general, not just around here, is as kind of vibrant, I think, as I've seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of these shows could use another 50 people. Hint, hint for people out there listening.
Yeah, go to shows.
Yeah, the Chameleon's always kind of the shadow in the specter looming all of us.
It was such a place.
It was such a place. A thing to consider, though, was during our heyday, let's say 2000 to 2010 or whenever, it was the only game in town, essentially, and upstairs, the big room, unless there was 200-300 people there, it looked empty.
Right.
The lounge, you could fit about 100 people or so, but a lot of times the shows were 21 and up.
Right. Yeah.
So there's so much stuff playing the Upside or Little Mutants or Westart or even Zootropolis that Chameleon wouldn't take just because they either were already booked because of the only game in town, or they're like, well, crap, that band it's not right for the lounge, but it's not enough people for the upstairs.
Right. That's a valid point.
So while, I mean, we all miss them, there's, I mean, you know, there's TELUS, there's, again, Little Mutants, there's Upside and West Arts Metropolis, Papa's Palace. There's probably 20 places. SO Arts, shit.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm going to kick myself when I realize how many places I forgot.
Yeah.
So a frustrating and kind of, I know you haven't brought this up yet, but I know you're talking about with Molly, the kind of gatekeepy thing that, yeah, I don't know if it comes with age, but it's like, I know at the shop, there may be so many guys who maybe hit their mid-30s and it ain't the same anymore, whether it was literally music or movies or The Simpsons or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was the same as I remember seeing my parents' friends where it's like, Led Zeppelin broke up. Music's done, you know? Mm. And it's so fucking frustrating.
Yeah.
So there'd be guys who come in like, Chameleon's Club, you know, and then kind of talk to them and realize like, dude, you haven't been to a show there since, you know, you right. were 16 and back right. in 1996 or whatever. You know, there's all this stuff happening. Not all of it speaks to me, not all of it speaks to you, but there's something happening, and there's some 16-year-old going to a show wherever now who's like, holy shit, I've found my people.
Right, right.
So I have the same argument about Star Wars, where it's like, hey, let kids have Star Wars, you know? I get it's not the same as when you were 14, but...
Right.
So yeah, there's so much shit going on. To a degree, with some of the stuff being a DIY space where they don't have their address posted, you kind of have to be engaged and know people.
Yeah.
But it's there. And there's a lot to choose from, and you know, thank you everyone who's supporting it, and you know, don't kind of take it for granted if you know you want to see concerts but you're kind of unsure. Roll the dice on something sometime, and odds are you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, shout out to the downtown Lang Syne House too.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you just follow that guy, you're going to know everything what's going on. Yeah, so,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like if so, for the listener out there, like if you listen to a stream of episodes, you know what I mean? Like, I've been battling with this concept a lot, you know, of like what's going on in the Lancaster space. I feel like it's kind of like two different worlds, though. You know what I mean? Like, we'll just split it here. Like, the non-rap stuff is like always been up and down and good and around or whatever. But all of a sudden now there's a bunch more venues that are allowing hip hop artists to play, which I think is fantastic. But then there's still this weird, like, I don't know, this weird thing in the air of like some venues are like, hey, we don't want to do that or whatever. And a lot of people that, you know, we work with and a lot of people that we've had on the podcast don't feel super great about that. But I don't think that really speaks for like the scene as a whole.
Well, like, and like, I think they feel like they're not going to get booked at.
Yeah. But like, you know, I literally had a meeting the other day with a group of guys that are, you know, Phantom Power has been really opening their doors a lot to like more hip hop stuff. And, you know, they're booking shows over there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Upside has done stuff, and I literally performed at a DLZ house show with all rappers and stuff. So like,
wow.
I think it's changing, but I was just curious, like, if I know you're playing with like hardcore punk and stuff, but like, are you hip to like the hip hop stuff that's going on in the around here at all?
Or? Yeah, actually, I got to set up records at the Skate Wagon, did a thing called Winter Wagon out in Quarryville, and so Shaw Calhoun, who was fantastic. A disconnect for possibly some people that I can say is like me coming from a DIY background, like, oh, a show is there's four or five bands, they play for this amount of time, you charge this much money, stuff like that. Hey, book a bunch of hip hop guys. Oh, is it the same? Does everyone play for 20, 25 minutes, 30 minutes? Is that too long? Is that too short? Is there need to be 10 hip hop artists? There's kind of that kind of learning curve.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some people they encounter are just full on dicks too. So I mean, that doesn't help. But in general, it just might be like, oh, well, I want to book hip hop bands, but I'm not exactly sure.
Right. It is different. Like, we went to that Hookah Lounge show and it was like everybody had like two or three songs.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was 5 minutes and you're done.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but we went to a show recently that like fucked up my mind about like the younger generation or whatever. Mm. Maybe I'm just being a curmudgeon or whatever, but like it was fascinating. I had never been to a show before where there was like a pretty decent amount of people there and like no one cared.
it seemed that way, yeah.
Like no one was paying attention to.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my god.
They were like dancing to the house music and sitting down for the performance.
Oh yeah.
I was like, what the hell is happening? I guess I don't really have some giant point around that.
But we also left early, so you know, maybe they were there for people that were performing later.
Yeah.
Facts, like, you know, I saw photos from the night afterward and I was like, okay, there were people getting sturdy.
Yeah.
There's a weird thing too, where there's, if you think about when you were going to whatever fire hall or whatever to see a show back when you were a kid, you were, if you were there to see whatever band, there's easily 40% of the audience was there because they're buddies in the band. And when they're not watching Cirque du Soleil, they're listening to whatever, something completely removed from that, but they're just there to support their buddy.
Yeah.
So there's some stuff where it's like, I'm waiting for my friend's band to come on, you know? Yeah. So that's what's kind of funny, what, like that Return of the Pit thing. It's like, man, I wonder how many people watching Napalm Death play this room were there. Like, well, my friend's opening, so I'm trying to support them. I kind of don't care about death metal. Or
right.
So there's kind of always that to kind of contend with. Yeah. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think, I guess overall, though, positive direction.
Absolutely, know? I would say. Yeah. Yeah.
More venue. I mean, I've been complaining forever about no venues, and all of a sudden we got more venues, so that's good.
Yeah, you know. I had not mentioned Phantom Power, but I mean, they're hustling, booking stuff. Yeah.
We need to get Greg on.
Bringing stuff to Millersville. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I have his number.
That would be a great trash. I miss Greg.
I mean, everybody who works at Shannon, Max, I think, is still their door guy. Might be doing their lights. Oscar, is great.
Wonderful. I know there's a couple guys over there that are big fans of your space. So
yeah, we should
have to get them on.
Yeah. It's you know, for us being I believe we're at least Matt Hostetter refers to us as a tertiary market. So I assume we're still. I'm us and Harrisburg are probably still on the same level as far as booking that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you guys talked about this last time too. So there's possibly a venue going on down by Southern Market. Is that the rumor?
I don't remember which podcast that was. I know it was a while ago. So it might have been
Nick's. Actually, I take it back.
Yeah, I'd heard a rumor about that, and then heard it from someone completely unrelated. So I started looking into it, and like, I don't really have a whole lot of information. It's all just rumors and shit. Sure. But something about like the Marriott is like bidding to purchase a building. Like, I'm super talking out of my ass here, right? But there's like three buildings on that corner. One's like the tire thing, and then I think there's a residence, and then there's something else, and the owner of one of those buildings is like, I'm not selling this unless it's a music venue.
Interesting.
Okay. Is the word on the street. Like, so I don't know what's gonna happen with that, but if that did turn into a venue, it would be pretty cool.
It would be nice.
Although, like, the thought being then is that, like, the, you know, the owners of the Marriott would purchase it. So it would be like a Marriott, like, corporate.
Yeah, like a Live Nation or whatever, or something like that.
Which, you know, I mean if that might be good, though.
The convention center, then cool, because that room sounds like duty.
Yeah. That, and I know, so they just had the Dropkick Murphys, and there's a thing of like, hey, I waited till 9 o'clock to get in the door. I really wanted to see Pennywise or whoever was opening, and I couldn't, because, so I don't know if it's just they do it so kind of infrequently, they don't kind of have the structure to kind of get people in the door and get them a beer in their hand and stuff like that. Maybe a place like that could swoop in and change it. But it's another thing everybody is dealing with too, is like, at post COVID, this town still kind of rolls up and closes at like 11.
That's
something Telus deals with. That's something Zetropolis is dealing with. You know, with movies, we're wrapped up by then easily. But like, before COVID, you go into the restaurant part and they're partying until 2 a.m. And now it's like, I'm flipping the lights off in the movie theater, and Austin's cleaning up, and it's like, man, it's like 10:30.
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of the other, this is probably a whole other subject we could talk for SOS about, but just the idea of like, hey, if we're attracting a lot of retirement age people, cool.
The plan is to start the city shutting down early to get people.
Yeah. I mean, are they going to...
I didn't even think about that.
You know, obviously, Zetropolis books a lot of great, like, Americana and bluegrass kind of stuff. And so that's not, you know, super intense and might get retirement age people out to see a concert every once in a while. But, you know, are they going to be at Telus having a beer and watching Nick DJ at midnight? You know. So that's kind of the hurdle that seems to be the thing we're all dealing with in Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, there are... It's not really a whole lot of, I mean, I've been finding now that like there's all these little clubs, like the after hours clubs and stuff. There's way more of them than I thought there were. And I'm obviously not going to get into the specifics because they don't want their shit to be known, and they get closed down a lot. But those are interesting. I don't even know how to kind of talk about it on the podcast. Like, well, that,
it's almost in a tradition of like if you were a Freemason or in the FOE or Rainmaker or any of those kind of like fraternal organizations where you have to kind of have the secret knock to get in the door.
Yeah.
Which that kind of mystery is fun, but I mean, I definitely wouldn't be the band playing. Oh, we're playing the club that no one knows what it's called, right, and you have to blink twice to get in.
Yeah,
or, you know?
Yeah. It is kind of difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting stuff, man. This place is definitely changing. They're fixing the roads slowly. Shout out. I'd like to think I had Ahmed on, and I just bitched about the roads the whole time, and then some of the roads started to get fixed, so I'd like to think that I helped with that a little bit.
There's probably still not. So picture you're driving towards a train station down Prince Queen Street.
Yeah.
There's that weird like hump that will make your car kind of jerk to the other lane if you make that left. Yeah. I'd love somebody to come by and just smooth that out.
Yeah, we need to get that sorted. And these new those white posts around the corners to prevent people from parking near the corner. Great concept, but maybe you can move those back a couple inches so you don't get such wide turns.
Yeah, my wife and I live close to the Walnut Street bike path, and hey, I love everybody riding a bike, but I can't see anybody coming either direction, and then also I'm blocking it the entire time trying to figure out how to make a left.
Yeah,
it can be a little daunting.
Yeah, it's rough. But hey, we're gonna wrap this up relatively soon. We've been asking you questions the whole time. I always like to extend the opportunity. Do you want to ask us anything?
If not, it's fine. Let's see. Going to Europe, that's always fun. What do you guys got coming in here to record soon?
We're working on an album with a band called Wicked Scoundrel. There's some friends of mine from back home.
Very nice.
I am a transplant. I came here like 11 years ago.
Oh, okay. Where did you come from?
Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Ah, okay.
Not the best place, but it was a fun place to grow up.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're working on an 8-track album with them. And then afterward, they want to come back and re-record their first album, hopefully, which would be really cool.
And then just like a whole bunch of individual random other things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to put together like a live cipher in the live room where like me and some of the guys from Flapjack would just play instruments and have like 7 or 8 or 10 rappers come in and just throw some bars down.
That'd be very fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we just released a cipher V2 somewhat recently. Check it out if you haven't seen it. It's pretty dope. It's like 8 minutes and 50 seconds long, 7 artists, all original production, pretty cool stuff. We work with so many different people that are like kind of either working on singles. We work a lot in the hip hop space too.
Sure.
Where like people are just like banging out tracks. Yeah. So I mean like tomorrow there's a lot of that stuff going on.
Yeah. Are you in the position where they're kind of coming to you for the beats and stuff, or is that something they kind of have to
Yes and no. I sell probably more beats or license more beats to people that are just like out in the ether, like through our website and stuff. There's a couple projects that like, you know, are kind of in the works of like, hey, you know, we're going to do all the production for this.
Yeah, like with that Velcro thing.
Yeah, I mean that too. So I'm releasing, I don't know when yet, but a drum and bass record.
Oh, wow.
It's all original production and stuff. That's pretty wild stuff. Yeah,
like the hip hop space is kind of a lot of people are just like finding beats on YouTube,
right,
and then they become familiar with it. So it's they come in with a beat and they want to do that track, and rather than being like, let's sit here for the first half hour and like go through. Or I mean, all the beats are on the website too, so they could do the same thing that they're doing on YouTube and familiarize themselves with it. But
everyone's kind of different too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like sometimes people will come in with 100 beats,
right,
and be like, let's listen to all of these and then figure out what's what,
which one to use
from there. And it's like, all right, cool, I get it, you want to hear it in here or whatever. Sometimes people come in with everything prepared, they purchased all the licenses, they have everything all sorted out. Sometimes people will grab stuff off YouTube with no plan of purchasing the instrumental
and
just go in there and freestyle. Sometimes what I like the best, I think that makes the most sense financially for artists, is to like just download the beats, figure out what you want to do, and then when you're ready to like put everything together, then go out and purchase the ones that you actually want to use.
Sure.
The only problem with that, though, is like you do run the risk if it's a very popular track that somebody else buys the exclusive rights for it before you can, and then you can't use the instrumental.
And then all your work was in vain.
Mm. Right, which is, it's kind of a gamble. I've seen it go every different possible way. Yeah. But that's such a separate world, you know.
Are you finding people are still doing sample based stuff? It's not as much of the kind of the set like trap beat, for instance.
Both.
Yeah.
I mean, so with drill music specifically, like it went through the same kind of turn with trap, where like you could find any song that was ever created like drill remix. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Sampling like, you know, NSYNC or whatever, and turn it into a banger.
Like,
and then
way downtown.
Yeah. And I know what happened a lot, which was really funny, because a lot of these younger guys, it was starting to be like Cocomelon and like children's shows, drill remix. And then they're putting like really disrespectful bars on top of like the, you know, like a Barney theme song type shit.
Yeah.
Which is funny to me, but also like, you know, if the song's dope, the song's dope.
Sure.
But yeah, I'd say like kind of in the middle. I mean, we say we pride ourselves in it, but it's also like, I don't know, just it's so normal now. Like we work in so many different subgenres and genres, right. So many different people doing so many different things that like we really do see like kind of all of it, you know.
That's always refreshing.
Yeah,
that's kind of the I given the opportunity to own a store today, I would pass. But not long after I started working with Metropolis, I ducked into Stan's to grab some sleeves, and Stan's is a great shop. I like the owner Mark a whole lot, but there was two younger-ish guys in there who obviously were looking to buy records to get beats from. Mm-hmm. And in there, they have old soul records and stuff like that, but there's not kind of the, well, this is a dollar, I'm going to take a chance.
Right.
And you can kind of see them looking around going like, crap. And that was one of the most fun things to do when I had the shop, was with the 50 Cent Room and stuff, where Nick or Brett or anybody else comes in, much younger people coming in, and okay, they're buying the new Kendrick Lamar record, but then they get a stack of stuff in the 50 Cent bin. They get some of the, you know, some cheaper stuff and the regular used stuff, and it's like, cool, I have a pile of stuff to kind of work with.
Right.
If something's a dud, I'm out 50 cents, or I swap it with a buddy of mine, kind of, who cares?
Yeah,
And kind of seeing people not exactly get frustrated, but kind of going, well, crap, I kind of hoped that Lancaster downtown would have a spot I can kind of crate dig. Yeah. Is a little bit of a drag. So hopefully they get the word out that, I mean, there's still the record show that happens. Once a month out at Spooky Nook, for better or for worse. And, you know, the other stuff kind of outside. I know when I was going, guys would come in like, oh, I was looking for records like at the mall. And it's like, oh, dude, come on in. Let's, you know. So kind of trying to help show people the path, you know.
Right. No, that's dope. Very cool. You got anything? No. All right. Let's go enjoy the sunshine. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thank you guys for having me.
Anything you want to plug? Anywhere people can find you? Any of that good stuff?
Sure. Stuff's always happening as Metropolis, whether it's movies, music. My wife and I do the horror movie night. My wife and I do a movie trivia night. We just did that last night. So find Metropolis on Instagram. Once the shop closed, I felt the name change was in order if only so people wouldn't kind of just come to my house thinking I had moved the shop to there. You can find me at Creature Beach Records on Instagram, and between records and all the other junk I do, that's all on there. And band's called The High Heels. Feel free to check them out on Spotify if you're into that kind of thing. And
very cool,
let you do it.
Yeah, we'll definitely play one of your tunes here at the beginning.
Thank you.
Just one question left. I'd like to end all the podcasts like this. You said you're 44?
Yes.
And you're 44 years of existing and breathing and being alive in this planet and other planets, potentially. What's your biggest takeaway so far? Like, what have you learned?
Don't assume someone else is going to do the right thing. Whether it's supporting a local business, whether it's helping someone out in a tough situation. You know, none of us are angels. We're all human. We all kind of do the best we can, but just realize it's got to start with you.
Hell yeah. I love that. Groovy. Rock and roll.
All right. Done. It's over.